Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's the kind of call that we need. People who've actually had real experience out there on the streets, have real information to add to what we have, and who can be eyewitnesses as to what happened. I mean, that's what cop watching is all about. That's what city council watching and court watching is all about. You not only are there to exercise some kind of influence, sometimes ineffectually, as our caller found when she tried to get the police chief to take some action to do his job, which he apparently wasn't willing to do, if her account is accurate, but also passing on that account as a credible eyewitness later. And even if the Citizens Police Review Board buries your complaint, even if the city council bars you from the offices by court order, even if the Sentinel won't write about your account, it's important that you bring it to the public in whatever way you can, because there are other people out there, maybe 10 or 20 of them, who have seen similar things, who are afraid to talk about them. So again, give a call to 427-3772. This is your opportunity to speak on the air, and we're a 24-hour station. Different programmers have different priorities and different subject matter, but I encourage people generally to feel free to call in to free radio. If you see something going on out there that disturbs you, then call in and talk about it. And in fact, what I do, of course, I try to do that when events actually happen on the streets. I broadcast it immediately to a crowd of people in terms of speaking loudly to other folks, come on over, see what the police are doing. And I think it exercises a moderating influence on police behavior. Some would say, oh, you're just, you know, getting their dander up. Oh, you're frightening them. Oh, you're putting yourself up for interfering with an officer. All those things are possibilities, but it's even worse to allow a well-oiled military machine to continue on unimpeded. You can't do that. You have to step forward and make sure that these people are obeying the law, make sure that they're not going after a class of people in a discriminatory and selective manner, which frequently happens. In fact, it's even written into our laws in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, municipal code 6.36.010, that endless thing that we've actually spoken literally millions of words about, I have, on this station, is still in place. And when we try to even get the matter on the agenda at City Council, we become the subject of an injunction barring us from City Hall. That is what happened on December 27th. And I've spoken about it before on the radio, and going to be speaking about it again. I'm going to play a little bit of a good track that I picked up called On the Edge, which is a radio ballad about teenagers in England and Scotland. And then I'm going to try to play you a little bit of that first night, 1994, while we're still on the subject. I got to give myself time to cue it up. But first, this. Hi, you're on free radio.
Hey, big boy, how's it going?
Hey, Mr. Merlin.
Hey.
You listening in?
Just tuned it in, yeah.
Cool.
Just tuned in right now. I wanted to let the listeners know something.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people know on December 26th, my mom died.
Oh, Merlin.
And so I wanted to let people know that, I'm poor.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was on Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a big jar at the Port and the Patriot downtown if people wanted to help pitch in for the funeral expenses.
Okay.
You know, for my mom's funeral.
Yeah, Poet and the Patriot, of course, is a pub that is sort of halfway between the Baglery and Pacific Avenue on that little side street there.
Yeah, it's in the same parking lot as the Coomba Jazz Center.
Uh-huh.
So if anybody wants to help out, go put a few bucks in that. It'd be appreciated. Money goes to the funeral and stuff like that. My mom's still not cremated.
Hey, I will hope that that happens. And also, if anybody can't get down there but wants to give a donation, you can always call 423-HUFF, and I will pass them on to you, Merlin.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Lawyers aren't cheap.
I hear you.
Hey, thanks, Robert.
All right.
Bye.
And that's sobering news. Sorry about that, Merlin. And indeed, Poet and the Patriot, if you want to give a little something to funeral expenses for Merlin's mom. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. And as I said, we're going to play a little bit from this On the Edge, which is actually a 30 or 40-year-old British composition. But it looks interesting, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Children of a troubled world, the tale of a search and of a long journey. leaving the safe and guarded fortress. The searchers walk in the trackless places. From the world behind the wall, out from the shelter of green oases, each one comes and walks alone, high on the stony ridges, stumbling across the broken ground, searching for peaks of fabled mountains.
I'm 19 years old.
I'm 15.
16.
15, 16, 17.
I'm just coming up for 18 years. You always seem to be searching for something. Sometimes you think you find it, or part of it, and then you lose it again.
I'm 19. 19 and a half.
17, Neil.
I'm nearly 20, no.
To live. To go anywhere, live. To wherever it is. Especially in deserts and places like this.
I'm 16.
14, nearly 15.
I'm 17, you see. I mean, I'm only young. When you're our age, leastways I feel, that there must be something in life, you know, something to be had. And my problem is that I can't see it. I don't know what I'm searching for, but I feel that there must be something there.
Nearly 18.
19.
I'm 20.
But now, as I'm getting older, and you begin to think for yourself, this is when it comes very difficult for you. Because you begin to get your own thoughts, and that's when you wonder whether you're just using your parents' thoughts or whether you should be using your own, what you feel yourself.
I'm 17.
15.
18.
19.
When people talk about young people, that's me, you know, they're addressing me and they're talking about me.
I'm 17, you see. I mean, I'm only young.
To me, I feel important. But to the world, no. I mean, to me and my surroundings, I'm the most important thing.
I've got to understand.
I can't stand routine at any time.
I want to break away.
There's a world in front of you. You've only got a certain space to go. I go to my factory and come back. That's supposed to be my bit of seeing the world. The whole world in front of you. The whole world to see them. Things that haven't been discovered.
All the years I've waited for this day. All the time I've been preparing, now I'm on me way.
I just want to go.
There's a world outside just for the taking, a life is there just for the making.
Time that I was going on my way.
I always feel that anything can happen at any time. I'm going to wake up one morning and something in the post, or I'm going to meet somebody and something's happened to me.
Goodbye, old world, I'm leaving you behind. There's a brand new universe waits there for me to find.
You can't put it to words.
A place where no one else has been, a place that no one else has seen. It's time that I was going on my way.
To me, there's far too much to do and to see, and too many people to meet, and too many places to go.
The years between, say, 10 and 21, that's when you'd have a little bit of enjoyment. You're free, no things to hold you down. You're supposed to be able to enjoy yourself. That's the age.
Mean to live my life before I die. Mean to ask a million questions, know the reason why.
I want to find out about things.
Don't leave a single taste untasted. Don't let a single hour be wasted.
Time that I was going on my way.
Stood on the edge and watched the dance too long. Get in the ring and swing your partner while you're young and strong.
Get the beat, get the urge to dance.
Your life's your own, only you can live it. Move to the beat, man, now get with it.
Time that I was going on my way.
Getting away from the tragedy and getting something out of life.
Something definite, something you can rely on, something to be there always.
Pointless.
I'm just drifting.
Life's got no meaning, really.
Continual A to Z.
Just seem to drift on and on and on.
Sometimes I could scream that
making
time goes so slowly,
life
wanting something to happen,
give you
waiting for things.
Like when you go somewhere strange or turn a corner.
There's always this thing again, you know. Why be different? I mean, everybody else is quite happy to be as they are. Why do you want to be anything more than you are?
I mean, you got to be yourself.
You know, I'm nobody and
I'm just drifting, waiting for things.
I've got to vibrate, you know.
I think being in this country at the present time is just a huge adventure.
Waiting for things.
Life itself, to me, is just a huge adventure.
Waiting. Waiting. Waiting.
We're searching for something, but we've got no idea what it is. Something unusual, not routine. Something that's out of this world. Something that's unique. Something that no one else has done. Something that sets you different from everyone else. Because teenagers are teenagers. You sort of class with millions of other teenagers. You read about teenagers. You can't get a paper, pick up a paper without seeing teenagers. And to think that you're one of them, you're just the same. You want to be someone entirely different, someone unique. And this is what you're searching for, that thing that's unique.
What is it like, the world outside, world beyond the wall? Does it compare with all the tales they tell? What is real and what are dreams in that world where nothing is what it seems? Who can advise me?
How can I use the lessons learned that outside the wall? Can I walk through fire and not be burned on the way? How can I make that world my own and fight the fear when I'm alone? Instruct me. You, the two who gave me breath, you who fashioned me, you who clothed me with your flesh and bone, you fed and sheltered me, open the door and set me free. Now you can help me.
I want to break away. When you're born, your mother thinks, oh, he's going to be a great lad. You're cast, you're moulded, and that's where you're going to be, but if you break away, you're regarded as strange and as a beatnik or something.
You shouldn't go out with boys, you're too young.
You're not going, I am going. You're not. I am going.
You're not old enough. You don't do this. Where have you been? What have you been doing? Where you were?
I think you're born to die. You know, you just eat, sleep, drink and die. And that's it. That is their happy life.
The tale of the children of the troubled world. The tale of the search and the long journey. Each one awaits the word of comfort, the simple gesture of recognition from from those who once made the same journey.
I find it very difficult to talk to my parents.
I have no trouble with my dad because he's on nights. He's been on nights for 6 years.
Of course, I respect my parents, but I don't think they realise I'm growing up at all.
I never discuss anything at home. Parents were too busy watching the television.
My dad sits there, and I don't talk to him because we only rare.
There's my father. He's working himself to death just for me.
So I sit there all night long with nobody to talk to. This is the honest truth. And, you know, I've got nothing except my mates. It's probably my fault as well, not just them. It's just the way things are.
And when I start discussing this with my parents, she just gets all hurt and won't discuss it with you at all. She says, I don't know what to make of you, you know?
Do you ever think that there's such a thing as a sort of a family life? Honestly. Jazz about the mother and the father, and it's sort of Enid Blyton, isn't it?
And that was On the Edge. Selections from Ewan McCall, Charles Parker, and Peggy Seeger, English folk singers and American musician, radio ballads, late 50s, early 60s, but it sounds pretty much like today, even though it was 40 years ago. It's kind of spooky. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobs Pierre Robert. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And as I promised, I'm going to play a snatch from 1994. That is an interview with some folks on the street around the time that the mini-riot happened and the police-created riot. And one thing I didn't say when I was talking about this was that it seemed like a massive blunder by Lieutenant Cipone and whoever else was involved in the police command, and we understood she was in control at that point, to herd people onto Pacific Avenue as well as to try to get them to leave early when there wasn't really a problem. And what, in fact, I said this may have been a mistake, maybe it was intentional, because the police then later were able to use this along with merchant concerns about the homeless to pass the downtown ordinances, which made it illegal to sit on the sidewalk, made it illegal to panhandle for spare change. There were a whole series of decorum ordinances, which no doubt Mayor Fitzmaurice would have loved at the time. He's now big on decorum at City Council, and we'll talk more about that later. But the question whether the police did this, it was a stupid move. I have to believe it was a stupid move, because I don't think they really wanted to create this kind of situation, but, you know, there are some perhaps more dark-minded than myself, or perhaps the police are more dark-minded than I give them credit for. Perhaps it was intentional, designed to show that, to let people get out of control so that eventually they would have more power, and indeed the downtown ordinances gave them more power, and indeed it was traditional for police to withdraw their forces completely from areas like the safe sleeping zone thing, where they were misinforming people that they could come and sleep there, misinforming the businesses that they couldn't do anything at all to deal with drug problems or other clearly non-sleeping problems. That was a conscious choice made by the police department, and it was a form of sabotage of a law they didn't like. So perhaps it's not so far-fetched to believe that this was an action that they undertook in order to create new laws. And indeed, these downtown ordinances had been kind of floated a year before under Mayor Neil Coonerty as the Move On Musicians Law, and they were dumped because there was a loud outcry from the ACLU. In those days, the ACLU occasionally stepped into local matters, unlike now, when they haven't been seen or heard from for many moons. Get on it, Bob Tarrin, please. Get to it, Isabel Gilman, all you old ACLUers. What about the sleeping ban, you know? So I don't know if it was intentional. I don't know if it was a complete mistake. I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I don't want to be overly naive. And here is a little bit from that time 6 years ago, New Year's 1994, but first this. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I couldn't help calling when I heard you speak about the ACLU, Robert.
Uh-huh.
When was the last time you heard the ACLU stand up for anything local?
Local. No.
Anything.
San Francisco, yes. Santa Cruz, no. Well, Bob Tarrin, I think, wandered into a city council meeting two years ago and spoke against Catherine Byers' curfew law, But aside from that, I don't recall much else.
I don't remember them ever being anywhere near the playing field during the Danner recall days.
Oh, no. I mean, they're ACLU is, you know, these are sort of well-connected local attorneys who don't want to rock the boat, generally, and they're ready to run the other direction at the slightest sign of, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to even judge clearly what goes on because I'm not privy to their insides.
Well, I wish there were a way to say this with some politeness, but I think this is important to explore as to why organizations like the ACLU are so without merit in their own playing field.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important, too, and I know that we did get some support from the ACLU from out of town, but
not
from the local ACLU. Some of the problems have to do with, I guess, people's egos and people's agendas. We had a lot of support from Margaret Marr and other local attorneys at one time, but then they decided that I was poison and anybody associated with me was poison, and they wouldn't help us, and so a split developed, and nobody's heard from Margaret Marr in several years on civil rights issues around the homeless. That's too bad. I know that you've been working, and I recognize your voice, Bob LaMonica.
Happy New Year, Robert.
Yes, and we will just expose you to the entire community here. You've been working on rent control, and we've actually played an interview with you and Bonnie Moore at City Council in those days before I was barred from the City Council
area.
That
was a fun interview, by the way. I admire Bonnie Moore.
Yeah.
She's an outstanding local spokesperson.
Yeah, she is.
But
she hasn't given up.
It seems that a lot of, quote, us are more interested in petty power than in principle.
Mm.
And we will look the other way out of fear of being disfellowshipped from the next West Side Wine and Cheese function.
There you go. Well, those are important functions after all, Bob. Well, what about the next rent control function? What's going on over the hill? Tell us about that. You spoke at a forum about a month ago. I'm still looking to get a recording of that damn forum, and nobody seems to have it. Actually, I haven't been looking too hard, but if you get your hands on it, let me know. And what's coming up on that subject?
I don't know what to say. I mean, I want to make contact with some of the folks who were on the panel and see what they think. The dilemma with rent control is, of course, that the money is opposing it. If you want to get involved in the rent control issue, where the money is in opposition to it. And that goes politically also. You don't see politicians standing up for rent control anymore. They might have done this 20 years ago when the label progressive had some meaning here in Santa Cruz. But I shudder when I think of applying the word leadership to the present political mix that we have now. But what might happen, my sense is that there's going to be a critical mass at some point where middle class people are going to be so affected, those that don't own property, are going to be so affected by the escalating, skyrocketing property values that we will see a shift in the political status, and that there will be a bandwagon. We'll see. It's very, very problematic. The times are not with it. I don't see anyone here in Santa Cruz in the traditional leadership category standing up for rent control. And that includes the Santa Cruz Action Network, by the way.
By Cracky.
Right, which was born out of rent control. This is high irony.
That's SCAN you're talking about.
That's right. SCAN, 20 years ago, was born out of the rent control movement that failed in Santa Cruz.
Interesting.
But now, if it had merit 20 years ago, does it not have merit now? Well, apparently the problem is that when you're young and you're a little bit of an outsider, you're willing to rock the boat. But when you're on the inside, you don't want to be disfellowshipped, just like the ACLU here in Santa Cruz. They don't want to be disfellowshipped. They want to be in the tuxedos and go to the country clubs and go to the wine and cheese functions and not rock the boat. So what we have is a situation where we have petty power taking precedence over principle.
Well, you did say, I think, in our last conversation that the San Jose Mercury reporter, what's his name?
Joe Rodriguez deserves immeasurable credit for boosting rent control on a massive level. In fact, he has been accused of the same things that we were accused of here in Santa Cruz. He's being accused of rents being raised. People are afraid that there might be rent control over the hill, so they're blaming Joe Rodriguez for you know, the reason why they're jacking up the rents is Joe Rodriguez is inciting the people towards rent control.
That's what Tim Fitzmaurice said when he was asked why he wouldn't deal with rent control. He said because he didn't want to alarm the landlords into raising rent.
Let me say this, and I ask for forgiveness for the way I'm going to say this. Absolute, total, pathetic cowardice.
Well, yeah, I mean, I noticed that about the mayor regarding his behavior on the issue of the sleeping ban. Instead of, you know, taking his medicine, which is what having to deal with, you know, peaceful protesters sitting in the public foyer of his offices, he used his administrative assistant, Anna Brooks, claiming that we were harassing her in order to get a compliant judge to issue an illegal restraining order. I actually did some interesting research on the net this morning when I got an email from another constitutional rights fighter in another part of the country, which informs me, and it's interesting, I think it's true, I haven't researched or, shepherdized the entire case, but it is completely improper to give a restraining order to people, let's say, without notice, and that's what we got. We got a restraining order without being called into court and given a chance to respond. That is particularly important in free speech cases. I mean, if there's violence involved and there's an imminent emergency, then you can do it. But if you're dealing with an issue that involves shutting down a public area to people because they are annoying or the quote harassing, and you're talking about things like Anna claimed we were pilfering pens, and she claimed that we made it an uncomfortable environment for her. Well, these kinds of selective statements that actually are very subjective don't rise to, of course, the level of any. She never claimed there was any violence. She never claimed there was any threats of violence. And yet, the mayor and the city attorney went to the judge, Sam Stevens, and got a restraining order ex parte, that is, without us even appearing.
Well, a lot of these things get down to who discredits whom. And rather than having issues surface to where they're dealt with credibly and rationally.
Right.
What we do is we crush those that speak out. This is an old tactic, and it's old and it's boring, even here in Santa Cruz.
Right.
These are bureaucrats of the worst form, Robert. Mm-hmm. If Mr. Fitzmaurice believes that the sleeping ban is wrong, he should stand up and say so. Otherwise, he should resign from office.
Well said.
I'm personally tired of this posturing hypocrisy in Santa Cruz.
It's
boring.
It's particularly true that Fitzmaurice claims to be a Green, and the Greens specifically had a provision in their, not just their state party, but the local Greens said, either you endorse ending the sleeping ban or you leave, we can't endorse you for office. So he's actually discredited his party as well. The sad thing, as you and I know, is there has been no emergency meeting of the Green Party to disaffiliate itself from Tim Fitzmaurice.
Because what happens? Because they got a little chunk of power, they got a little in, and they want to keep their little in. They want petty power over principle. This is an old story. It's how people are appeased.
Well, talking about petty power, I'm going to now turn to the 1994 petty power of the police, and we'll get to hear what they did back then.
Robert, take care. Happy New Year.
Hey, the same to you, Bob.
All right, see ya.
Bye-bye. You were saying that you felt that you were wondering.
I feel like what's happening in our society that is causing these kids to have so much anger and frustration that it's not...
Abusive police attacks?
It's not the kids that have the problem. It's our society that has the problem, and we need to address the real problem instead of...
Well, wasn't the primary problem the police attempted to clear people away from the town clock?
Away from the town clock,
in a ridiculous manner?
Everything was absolutely fine at the town clock. There were drum circles, good vibes, people having a good time.
Did you see this? Were you there?
I was there. Absolutely.
What did you see about the police? What?
I just saw them come in, and start to. I don't really know what happened.
In
a very intimidating manner. Absolutely.
And what did they do?
I don't know. I just heard some kids talking. They had been hit in the stomach from those people down at Poet and Patriot talking about that they had been hit. Yeah.
By police,
and they were pretty upset about it.
So you didn't see any police hit anybody there?
No, I didn't. I just saw them come in a pretty intimidating manner, and it was intimidating enough for us to walk away, definitely.
Uh-huh.
We didn't want to stay. But we wanted to stay until the police came. Yeah.
So we would call this a less successful example of police work here in beautiful
Absolutely.
Santa Cruz. Yes.
Absolutely. If they would have left the scene alone, I think it would have been...
Or just handled it a little more.
Handled it a little
lightly,
differently.
Maybe.
Yeah.
They came with riot gear and with their hoods down.
They were ready. They came with their sticks. They were ready. They came with their hoods on and sticks up.
How many were there?
Probably 40.
40 cops?
At least
40.
At least.
Yeah. And how many people would you say were at the town clock?
Oh, hundreds.
A couple hundred. I have no idea. But it was very...
I'd say at least three or four.
Very good vibes down there.
It was a much greater crowd than number of police, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that they had to be probably 10 times or more the number of police.
Oh, at least, yeah.
So there were like maybe 30, 40 police. So...
Yeah.
Maybe 500,000 people?
Oh, I have no idea. No
I'd
idea
say 300 or 400.
Yeah.
Probably.
So but yeah, I'd say it was a very good vibe down there until the police showed up.
They came, what we saw is they came right in and broke up the drum circle.
Exactly. Right they went
they
right to the drum circle.
They targeted the drum
right
circle.
To the drum circle. And
didn't seem much of a point to me.
No.
targeted a bunch of drummers.
It helps the insurance companies later on.
Turn off the party. You know, you turn off the music, it's easier to turn off the rest of the party because, you know, you've already disrupted the party.
The music creates
so now
so
you
much
come
energy.
In and you Well, yeah, turning off the music disrupts the party, and
That's
then you
right.
come in with physical force to further disrupt it and push people away.
And now we have broken glass in the streets, and a number of people have been injured, and property.
A amount of merchandise has disappeared, and it seems to be because people are rioting. The riots originally being started by the police, and then they spread out, as they usually do in a large crowd like that.
Yep.
So now the police apparently have evacuated the area. Are they still, are they blocked off the scene down there?
The police
there?
Walked down and swept the street.
They've swept it, but they're not sealing it. They probably don't have the force to seal it. So you see people wandering back.
Yeah, like right
and
there.
Coming in around the corners and stuff.
Looking at the stores.
A few bargains here in the midnight sale.
That card is...
Fear by the government of groups of young people getting together.
But... Now, did you see much, any misconduct by people in the crowd that would have justified this kind of police?
One guy just exposed his body to the rest of the world, which is a beautiful thing. That was the harshest thing I saw.
There was no violence happening until the police arrived.
That's
Everything
true, yeah. Then we started noticing violence once the police started.
No violence until the police arrived. Yeah.
Where do you see the headlines in tomorrow's Sentinel? Young punks provoke riots.
Absolutely, that's what it'll be.
Now here, that'll be the Sentinel headline.
Drummers.
Yeah.
Did they hit any of the people?
No. It started out real mellow at the drummer circle. They just basically walked into the middle of the drum circle and told everybody to leave. And after that, we chilled out. But of course, the hearsay I've heard is that they started getting a little more, or a little rougher.
The police or the crowd?
The police.
Yeah.
Because people were hanging out, but I mean, it's New Year's Eve. People want to get together and have a sense of community, you know, and feel a good vibe together. Of course, the way things are today, there's a negative aspect to everything, and you just need to tip it over the other side, and here it goes. Now we have broken glass all over Pacific Avenue. Nice street. Beautiful street.
Well, pretty sterile street, if you ask me, but...
Yeah. About a downtown, you know. But of course, we see the negative side of the people who have come here.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anything anybody wishes to add to this collage of...
Collage
of... Blah, blah?
Blah, blah.
Thank you for recording.
Certainly. Does anybody wish to give their names here?
I'll give my name. Lisa Gillespie.
Darren W. Crow.
Victoria Delatori.
Just Michael.
And Just Michael.
Just Michael.
I'm Robert Norris.
Hello, Robert.
And this is the sleep crime in progress.
Yeah, we've been noticing this the last few days.
We'll be sleeping here tonight, probably be arrested in the morning.
That's what we were being told, yeah.
Or ticketed, perhaps.
Misdemeanor in the morning for those who got tickets yesterday.
They say, yes.
That's what they say.
But they have never prosecuted a misdemeanor sleeping case. They usually use it to harass people and take them to jail, after which they drop the charges.
Get out of there, you like that.
What's up, Dan?
Jacket like that. That's
you like that jacket?
China wool, brother.
It's a nice
one like that.
No, this is it. I got this at a homeless shelter up in Marin.
Let's
lock down.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Nice to see you. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it's 1:36, and we're here on the Pacific and. Corner of Cooper and Pacific? No. Church and Pacific. Let's get shoved back. Let's walk. And we are walking up the mall in an attempt to see what's happening in the aftermath of the police sweep on Pacific Avenue. Looks like a relatively mellow situation.
You need to come back this way. The mall's closed down here, sir. You need to
stay over here.
The mall's closed.
Mr. Khan, please, they need to go back up here, okay? If you're at the homeless up here, that'd be fine here, but because they're unruly crowd,
Yeah. It's gotten way out of hand. We have too many businesses broken, and we have to get the unruly people off the street.
Okay.
You don't mind if I use the phone?
No, right here. Yeah. Well, I'd prefer if you could move up right here, because we won't stay from here down.
Excuse me? Okay.
I appreciate your cooperation. Thanks.
Fucking kids, man.
I know, man. Just fucking kids.
170, 116. So you heard it there.
What's happening up to the catalyst?
Anything
to be honest with you?
Yeah.
None.
No. Well, there you are. It's very simple.
Even though the government seeks war.
Words of wisdom from Dave Jacobs. So, small crowds of people are continuing to kind of cluster on the street. We hear war whoops from other side streets.
This never would have happened if somebody didn't get rowdy, man, and started throwing files at
you. No, the police moved in and broke up the drum circles. You know, then people got pissed.
I know somebody started throwing bottles at the car.
Well, afterwards.
Lord said.
After that is what I heard.
Right, was you there?
No, I heard it from four people, though, who were not involved, who were just sort of in middle classes.
I just know that there was this, like, passing through, and all of a sudden...
Oh, they were throwing bottles later, I mean, you know, but...
I thought the drums were still playing, I don't know.
Well, that was when the drums were still playing?
I thought I heard the drums always playing, and then I heard the...
Well, maybe, you know, I hadn't heard that. That may be...
Probably put a giant stick on it.
Let me ask this crowd what they said.
You know, I mean, I don't know who threw the first stone.
Was anybody present when this all started? Anybody?
Yes. Okay. Yes. People just like, it was like the whole fucking, the cops started poking people in the ribs, and as a result,
nobody was throwing bottles before that?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Fuck yeah.
No. I don't think so.
The cops formed the line, they were throwing bottles.
But the cops were
like
there,
the cops
literally.
Trying to clear them out away from the town clock.
Five minutes after midnight, they formed a line with right here.
15 minutes after midnight, they started pushing people in, poking.
And then probably like about a half hour after tear gas, some people started running.
Did they tear gas?
Yeah,
booms were.
That's why everybody fucking blazed down the hall.
Okay,
was that due to the fact that somebody was disturbing the cops?
No, everyone was peaceful until the cops came there five minutes after midnight. Everyone was peaceful, having a great time, smiling, laughing, saying Happy New Year. The cops came 5 minutes after. They could have, you know, been cooperative.
Like
they could have said, okay, everyone, you know, can you clear it out? Start, you know, clearing it out instead of coming in with just like, you know,
the riot act.
The night sticks out and like just instantly poking people.
Now what do you think?
Know? There might have been a few bottles.
Let's get the other view.
Okay, well they were throwing cops at police vans.
Cops at police vans?
No. They were throwing bottles at police vans.
Yes,
and then, you know, people started running down, and it was pretty peaceful, and then they started doing the trash cans over in the street.
Throwing trash cans into windows and shit eventually.
And then this guy came up to me and shook my hand and said, hey, man, everyone's blaming it on me. I'm from L.A. I'm used to this stuff. And then he, like, smashed the window, right?
Which window?
It was the one, the flower shop.
Flower shop.
The other side up from us.
Like the flower shop has anything to do with the police, you know, fucking poking your ass.
Hey, man, but you don't throw stones, man. It stops stones. I was there.
It was young punks, man.
As far as I've seen it,
even though I got a pound of cocaine with me, they still didn't catch me tonight.
And you heard it here first. So now, did you see any stuff happening before the police attempted to clear things out of the...
I didn't at all. I didn't even notice anything.
Everything was fine. They started moving in, and people wouldn't move...
So there is generally... Nobody disputes the fact that there was no hostility. No broken bottles.
Absolutely
not. Started moving in.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is a tape from January 1st in the wee hours of the morning, 1994. The evening before, the year before the first night happened, the police riot at the town clock that, perhaps the police overreaction, the police brutality at the town clock that prompted a riot on Pacific Avenue. Here's a little more of it.
And they moved in with the attitude like, if you don't move now, you know, and move fast, there was like 500 people out there, you know, people were getting hit, not only poked, but fucking hit in the back, hit in the legs, you know, and then of course people are going to start, you know, saying, hey, what the fuck, man, it's New Year's, we're trying to have a good time here, so they start throwing bottles, you know. Fucking A, they deserve it. They should have fucking dealt with it differently, man. This has never happened in Santa Cruz before. It's wrong, man. You know, and they basically started this whole fucking flurry of aggression, dude. I mean, they instigated the riot. if you could call it that. I mean, I would call it that. I mean, it was a typical riot in, you know, in the sense that, yeah, it's just bullshit, man. It's ridiculous. Shouldn't have happened.
I bet you can't guess what I'm doing right now. I would not even want to try.
Nobody wants to know, Andrew.
So this is the crowd outside the Cafe Milano.
And as a quote, my name is Andrew, I work at Cafe Milano's. While standing watching Pacific Wave and Surf in front of the store, I got nailed by the cops.
For what?
Just standing there because I was watching the storefront and one of them decides to give me a little belly club in the stomach.
And which one was this?
Cop? I have no idea.
Is he still present on the scene?
No.
Wow.
Well,
the
alarm went off right now.
No, and, you know, that's what surprised me.
You should talk to this man who apparently is involved with the store and tell him you were trying to defend the store.
We already did. Well, I told him, and I told him that you ran up and fucking took that one guy and took the shit back, dude. I was standing there with that fucking pole, like, you know, just going, hey, man, this is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this, you know, and we basically fucking made everyone get back. No one got anything because of us. You know, people would have been in there looting and fucking left and right. But I know those people are really nice people, you know. That's bullshit. This is our community, man, you know.
That's true.
It's fucked up. You know, I'm 100%, I didn't agree with what the police were doing, and I was, you know, I totally disagree with it, but, you know, that's not the right reaction, you know.
What else? So how many windows are broken on the street in here?
I could count right now from the beginning right there. One, at least one there, maybe two. There would be three. That's four. That's five. That's six. And then there's one right there at that store. That's seven. And that's about it. Seven or something.
Why?
I know, dude. I was seeing it in front of there, like, protecting it, man. I think it's bullshit.
Well, the reason it happened was the police broke up the drum circle with force at midnight instead of letting people disperse.
And like 5 minutes after midnight, they came in with fucking batons, billy clubs, riot gear, with the fuck. 5 minutes after midnight, they made an announcement. Everyone dispersed now. A few minutes after that, they started moving in. And people that wouldn't move, fucking, they got poked, dude. You know, there was a whole, I mean, there was like 500 people out there. And, you know, you can't expect them to just like, you know, boom, boom, you know. And everyone was kind of loose and having a good time. And they just, you know, started fucking beating people, basically.
There you have it. Any police abuse?
Fuck yeah, man. They were like running after people and hitting people, man. This guy was just standing there and they just fucking whacked him in the head, man. You know, I heard this cop say, like, those batons, man, are fucking serious. What the cops did, Rodney King, was, like, way worse than what the L.A. 4 did, you know. Rick is nothing like a cop.
I'm not a little bit sure about this, no.
So you were part of the drum circle at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
Were any bottles thrown before the police arrived?
Oh, no, not at all, man. We were just jamming. Everybody was having a good time, man. It was great, man. It was, like, best New Year's, man. I was pleasantly surprised.
Until this incident happened.
I could not believe they just moved right. But you know who, called the cops, man? Why did the cops show up there? You know, who called them? Was it, people in the tortilla flats, you know? I don't think so, man. It was the cops. I mean, it was the people in these stores here, man. People that own these stores, like that bookstore over there, you know?
That's the mayor. He owns that bookstore. The former mayor, Neil Coonerty.
Well, he's still city councilman. He still talks a lot of shit.
That's correct. That's correct.
Front page is that. What did he say? Did you read that?
Somebody, the store next to him apparently said that the homeless vigil stunk or something.
Yeah, that toy store.
Yeah.
Guy there.
That's what I heard.
The quote of the day.
The quote of the day.
You can smell it a block away.
Right.
There's a quote of the day. I can smell it a block away. Clock tower don't close till 1. Did you know that?
That's correct.
And when did they move in?
That is correct.
Before, I think it was a little bit before.
Like 55 minutes before. Or maybe even an hour before.
We could go out to that.
You want to talk?
Okay.
So it's nearing 2 o'clock. We're walking down the mall on the other side of next to the ID building, down toward the clock tower, across from the bookshop Santa Cruz, and the ID window has been hit. And what else has been hit? Evening again. Swing store got hit by somebody, and it looks like Toys and Games was not hit. Game-A-Lot.
minutes. People are still looking from their second-story windows in the St. George. It's trash in the streets. Sort of the aftermath. Here's a window store. Echo is completely broken out. And I'm approaching the Ben 10 restaurant, which hasn't suffered any damage. Evening. What's happening? Oh, not bad. Yourself?
New Year.
The same to you. It looks like a merry, pretty eventful time, huh?
Yeah. So-so. Could be better, could be worse.
So who were the clowns who planned this mop-up operation that provoked the riot? So as we walk further down, actually closer to the center of things, it's interesting, no windows seem to have been broken, so perhaps the windows were broken when police began tear gassing, as I heard that they did. And it looks like there was a broken window at the Cafe Espresso Royale. Anyway, there is a broken out window at 1549, a storefront that's empty. And of course the bank, the bank on the corner at 1551 Pacific has taken a hit or two in the door. So the word from the man on the street is it's 5 to 2. You, on the other hand, should not be smoking. I've warned you about this before.
Thank God.
All right, then. Marijuana, yes. Tobacco, no.
Okay.
All right.
I won't smoke anymore.
All right. So a the video camera is youths are approaching the man with the camera and asking him to tell the story.
A bunch of guys running down the streets, breaking windows, and I don't know
what provoked it.
The police were the main reason why this happened.
If they had waited maybe like 20 minutes longer instead of like rushing people right when like at five minutes after 12.
News, yeah. 5 minutes after. And this store right here, we were standing right there with poles in our hands, you know, keeping people away because they were trying to take stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we know the owner.
Now, can I get a statement from you on that?
No, I don't want
to. No, but an anonymous individual on the street suggested it seems strange that Game-A-Lot and... Don't cut yourself. It's broken glass.
More of it. This is bullshit.
But Tom Scribner still saw us. Yes, it is.
Go ahead and get that on there.
So then we have the many windows are broken, but not Game-A-Lot in the bookshop Santa Cruz, which you were telling me earlier had a quote in the paper, some kind. I didn't read that, but I heard there was a quote about homeless people.
They're the two biggest people against what's the homeless vigil. They're the ones that said that the smell's coming down the street, and that, you know, that's what they don't want in this community.
Right.
And it's right in front of their shop.
Well, it certainly looks like Kristallnacht here on the avenue. Flory, the blue-hatted peace vigiler and a sleep crime in progress extraordinaire. That doesn't sound right. But in any case, what's been happening?
Not much in the past 5 minutes. Mike went to sleep, committing sleep crime, and announcing it to the... right, dear clad officers on the corner, even as he engaged in it. Hopefully things will settle down and I can go to sleep pretty soon. Tired.
Or if it's time for a game of magic, what do you think?
Oh, perhaps.
You're not feeling like a magic game. So did Tim in the wheelchair got wheeled off to a place of rest?
I didn't even see what happened to Tim in the wheelchair.
Tim McGrath, one of the...
Right.
Veterans of the 1991 homeless campground closure at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Property. I was here earlier at the peace vigil. Well, thank you, Robert. One of the signs here at the peace vigil, now that we're here, say the plundering of a planet and its people, land, resources equals land, trees, people, oil, equals exploitation, production, marketing, consumption, and waste. We have a series of general signs about
the exploitation of the environment, but I noticed nothing about automobiles. It used to be a prominent part of a Flory demonstration. Now it seems to have taken a back seat, so to speak.
Abate our petroleum addiction.
And there you have it. Otherwise, we have a few signs. We are human, so are you. Think about it. Bad laws are made to be broken. You have no legitimate authority to write a law that makes it a crime for someone who is poor, has no house to sleep in the community they call home. If you were homeless, you'd be home now. Actually, the original phrase was, if you were homeless, you'd be home by now. It seemed to have more punch when I first said it many years ago. So, and you were claiming that the police ignored the peace vigil when they cleared it, Robert?
No, I was claiming no such thing.
What were you claiming?
I can't remember. It would be hard to repeat.
Are you disclaiming what you claimed?
Spontaneous.
And I think we're winding that one down. That was a sort of a long cut from 1994, January 1st, the wee hours, when the police rioted and provoked a riot in a completely unnecessary fashion. But none of that ever hit the media or was revealed as such. And in fact, this disorderly behavior from the police and inappropriate behavior by police became the basis for even harsher laws. It gave the police more power 3 months later when the downtown ordinances, making it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, making it illegal to ask for a dime peacefully from a seated position or at any time after dark, were made into law. These are laws that are still on the books, though the sitting ban has been somewhat modified after massive protest in May of 1994. It took direct action to change that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrop Spear, Robert Norris, and we have another hour left here on Free Radio of this show before we go into yet another first night, so to speak. Here's an interesting story from L.A. Shelter beds stay empty as homeless resist confinement. December 27th, police direct them to missions as part of crackdowns on Skid Row crime, but mental illness and other factors make it a tough sell in many cases. For months, police have been ticketing the homeless on Skid Row for blocking sidewalks and jaywalking. They've been asking more homeless people for IDs and taking those with outstanding warrants to jail. When they do this, officers remind them that right down the street there usually are beds available in the area's 6 homeless shelters. Actually, there usually aren't, but let's put that aside. It's one of the Skid Row's most troubling dichotomies. Many homeless people, due either to mental illness or sheer stubbornness, prefer to sleep in tents, cardboard boxes, or on the cold sidewalk. Some refuse shelters because they don't want to conform to zero-tolerance drug and alcohol policies, curfews, or attend prayer sessions. Some fear being robbed or attacked by other homeless, and others just want their freedom, said Leonard Schneiderman, professor emeritus at the UCLA School of Public Policy. Let me interject from the School of Hard Knocks here, Robert Norris speaking, that there are plenty of other good reasons not to go to shelters, including the fact that illness is there in quantity, that if you're tuberculosis sensitive, you might be likely to pick it up there if you have a problem, that if you're a couple, you may have trouble being with your partner. If you have a pet, you can't take your pet in with you. If you're working, all these reasons that know about in Santa Cruz and have rehashed so often are also true, but of course not mentioned. It's rather because those homeless people are crazy and stubborn. Right. Police who said they began rousting the homeless because of an increase in violent crime said shelter resistance leads to more violence. Outdoors, the homeless are preyed on by criminals. Drug use, drug sales, and prostitution are rampant. And of course, this is self-justifying behavior by the police, of course. This year, 4 homeless people have been murdered on Skid Row, a 50-block district east of downtown, where about 11,000 live in cheap hotels or on the street. Another 32 homeless people have been victims of rape or sex crimes, police said. The Central Division, which began tracking the number of beds available each night on Skid Row, said that between 50 and 300 beds in the area's shelters are open each night. That's interesting. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I had thought that they usually have a huge dearth of beds, but maybe we're... And are they talking beds or are they talking floor spaces here in Santa Cruz? They use the word bed, but they actually mean space on the floor with a mat in some cases. Officers have begun distributing brochures to the homeless with phone numbers and information on shelters and missions, but they can't persuade people like Ted Ivan, 39, to sleep inside. You can get stabbed in a shelter, Ivan said. You end up getting into fights. I would rather sleep outdoors, and I don't want to be in by 8 o'clock. Ivan lives on Industrial Street in a makeshift tent constructed of black plastic tarps. Nearly 50 similar dwellings line the street, with each tent housing three or four people. He lifted a tarp and revealed 10 donated blankets and a collection of clothes and cookware. "I like it here," he said. "It's freedom. I don't got no responsibility." Said Sergeant James McDonald, who usually finds about 300 people outdoors when he begins his skid roll patrol shift at 4 a.m., "Wherever you go, there's going to be societal rules. These people just don't want to follow the rules. They want to do their own thing. They're just stubborn." And that's my addition, they're just stubborn. Stubborn or crazy, of course. Schneiderman said the anxiety and suspicion of the many mentally ill homeless exacerbate the problem. Their life experience with other people has not always been nurturing. 23% of homeless women and 19% of homeless men in downtown L.A. are mentally ill, according to a study by Perry Johnson of the Downtown Mental Health Center. Other studies have estimated the proportion of mentally ill people at up to half. Schneiderman believes that no drug rules drive too many homeless people away. Every time you have a shelter that has a zero-tolerance policy, it is in effect setting up an eligibility standard for them to get into it, he said. It's sort of like saying there's a shelter, but the prerequisite you need to get into it is to be well, and that's not really responsive to the population we call homeless. True enough. Johnson's study found that 75% of the homeless men and 54% of homeless women downtown are substance abusers. Ezell Williams of the Los Angeles Mission agreed that such rules may be a deterrent. Some prefer to sit in the day room. "A lot of people don't come into shelters nor on the streets because they have a problem dealing with authority and rules anyway," he said. "Some prefer to sit in the day room." Los Angeles Mission can house 480 people, Williams said. Shelter is provided for 5 days at a time, but people must stay through the evening. They must check their belongings before entering the shelter, check in by 5:30 p.m., conform to the zero-tolerance drug and alcohol policy, and attend a chapel service. Reading a story, by the way, for all you new listeners about Los Angeles. Williams said the shelter is well used, but between the 1st and 10th of the month, there are usually more beds than usual available because that is the time when people receive Social Security or general relief checks. They may have money to buy food or a couple of nights in a hotel, he said. There are more than 1,200 beds among the 6 shelters in Skid Row. On December 8th, Friday, police records showed that available beds range from 1 at Volunteers of America to 296 at the Union Rescue Mission. Liz Moradian of the Union Rescue Mission, which has 580 beds, said that many homeless prefer to use the shelter's day room, which has chairs and tables and seats up to 400 men and 300 women, because they don't want to check their bags. "Some of the men, and we do have a couple hundred of them each night, will sit in chairs all night long," she said. The Union Rescue Mission also has a zero-tolerance policy with an 8 p.m. curfew. Women's beds are almost always full, but men's beds don't always max out, Moradian said. "They can come in and have a meal or a shower and leave," she said, "but once they come in and spend the night, they are here for the night, and some may not want to do that because they want to engage in odd behaviors." Michelle Giles, I would call it odd to have adults locked up after 8 o'clock at night. I would call that odd myself, but then again, that's just me. Michelle Giles, 23 and homeless for a year, said she prefers living in a tent made out of blue plastic tarp tied to a fence on Industrial Street rather than a shelter. Giles lived in a shelter once. "It just wasn't comfortable," she said. She didn't like being crammed into a room with 200 people. She was afraid people would steal from her, and she didn't want to participate in rehabilitation programs, she said. "It's dangerous on the street, but we all look out for each other. We share food, we share clothes," she said. "It's like family out here." Ted Ivan puts it more bluntly. "I'm a grown man. What are they going to tell a grown man to do for? I can take care of myself. I'm staying out of trouble, and nobody is messing with me." That's a story from the December 27th LA Times. Shelter beds stay empty as homeless resist confinement. Of course, in Santa Cruz, we have the sleeping ban, and nowhere near, and true in L.A. too, the number of even shelter floor spaces that would make it a real option for people not to be criminals at night if they wanted to go into a shelter area or the armory or the church floors, which is what the options are here in Santa Cruz. 427-3772 is our phone number if you want to give us a call. 427-3772. We have lines open now. And while we're waiting for your massive flood of calls, we're going to play a little Tom Lehrer for a change. The funny man who's also, I guess, a math lecturer up at UCSC on occasion, as well as a brilliant comic and songwriter and singer.
I I know some people feel that marriage as an institution is dying out, but I disagree, and the point was driven home to me rather forcefully not long ago by a letter I received, which said, "Darling, I love you and I cannot live without you. Marry me or I will kill myself." Well, I was a little disturbed at that until I took another look at the envelope and saw that it was addressed to Occupant. Speaking of love, one problem that recurs more and more frequently these days in books and plays and movies is the inability of people to communicate with the people they love. Husbands and wives who can't communicate, children who can't communicate with their parents, and so on. And the characters in these books and plays and so on, and in real life, I might add, spend hours bemoaning the fact that they can't communicate. I feel that if a person can't communicate, the very least he can do is to shut up. One of the big news items of the past year concerned the fact that China, which we call Red China, exploded a nuclear bomb, which we called a device. Then Indonesia announced that it was going to have one soon, and proliferation became the word of the day. Here's a song about that. First we got the bomb, and that was good, 'cause we love peace and motherhood. Then Russia got the bomb, but that's okay, 'cause the balance of power's maintained that way. Who's next? France got the bomb, but don't you grieve, 'cause they're on our side, I believe. China got the bomb, but have no fears, they can't wipe us out for at least 5 years. Who's next? Then Indonesia claimed that they were gonna get one any day. South Africa wants two, that's right, one for the black and one for the white. Who's next?